school library, public library, whatever. My name is Lucas Maxwell, and I'm the host. And that's it. That's the host. That's what you say when you start a show. I don't know what I'm saying half the time. But this podcast is for librarians mainly to see if there's something useful. Hopefully you can get something useful out of it. And they're usually pretty short, so 20 minutes or so. And again, it's usually practical stuff. So I hope this is useful to you. Talk about a couple things today. First of all, something that I'm pretty excited about and proud of is that we launched a new series, kind of a new program in the library, which essentially is our students taking the lead and teaching other schools, other students from other schools, how to play Dungeons and Dragons. So D&D is like a huge deal for me and personally, and also at the library. It's kind of exploded in popularity. And it's something that I'm very passionate about. And I feel like it has a huge amount of potential, if it's run in the right way, to increase mental, help with mental health, well-being, to create safe social settings for everybody, but especially for neurodiverse students, neurodiverse players like myself, who have struggled in the past. And I've talked quite openly about this stuff in the past about how D&D has been amazing for me, and I think for our students. So this is just going to be a quick one. So we're doing these lunchtime sessions. One of our year 11 students essentially is running a game with our students. So this year 11 student, they have about six players, and the players age and range from, I would say, 13 all the way up to 16 or 17. And they've been running a campaign since September. And essentially the other students who are year seven from another school in the country wanted to watch and wanted to see, like, because they're starting their own club, but they had no idea how to play. They had no idea what the rules are. And so what we decided to do is do a couple of lunchtime sessions where they took their lunchtime instead of just running through their campaign as normal. The Dungeon Master still did their campaign, but would pause every once in a while and say what they were doing. And I have to say, it was absolutely amazing. It was really fun and cool. And I was really excited to just sit and watch, really. And I would chime in every once in a while. But really, my goal was just, this is being led by the students. This is completely created, essentially, by the students, this kind of world. And yeah, so an example was that the first session was really about setting up, kind of like putting them in a room. There was a few traps, there were a few kind of scenarios they were running through, and the one of the players would say, what do I see in the cracks in the walls, or was there something in there? And the DM would say, roll perception, and we would pause it in a way, as in just pause and say, okay, this is what perception means, this is how this works. So the character has a perception score using their wisdom, ability. They roll the 20-sided dice, they add their wisdom bonus. They may have other bonuses as well. And I said, the DM, or Scarlett was saying, the DM has a number in their head that they need to get in order to get certain information. The higher they roll, the more information they get. It's really improvisational on the DM's part because they have no idea what the student's going to roll. They may say, okay, if you roll roll really low, like below five, they see very little. Between six and 10, they see a little bit. 10 to 15, a little bit more. 15 up to a natural 20, they get a lot more information. But it really is up to the DM. So they really kind of have to compartmentalize it. So it was really good for the younger DMs who are watching. You got 11-year-old Dungeon Master sitting there listening to a 16-year-old Dungeon Master kind of like explain. It was absolutely amazing. I really loved watching it. It's kind of made my week because it was just great to see the Dungeon Master taking over and being like, this is how this game works and this is what you do. And really like empathetic and, calm about it. You don't need to worry about this and that. You don't need to worry about the rules so much. And just doing exactly what a good Dungeon Master should do, in my opinion, and that try to waylay any fears or anxiety about the game, because it doesn't matter if you make a mistake, and that's what they said. So I guess my point is, if you wanted to watch a session with our students or virtually meet with our dungeon masters and learn about the game, meet with me even as well virtually, or if you're nearby, Glenthorne High School's in Sutton in London. If you are in London and want to check it out, you can always come and visit the library for the day if you're a librarian listening, and watch the session, because it's been really, I don't know, uplifting for me, and yeah, amazing to watch. So that was the Dungeon Master, the D&D kind of session that we had, which was amazing. So yeah, so D&D taking off in the library really and being amazing. The next thing I want to talk about is completely different really. I'm really excited that I have been able to provide essentially a free book fair to year 8 students, so our 12-year-old students in the library and throughout the school. So every single student in year 8, which is over 300 kids, has been able to take home a free book. And this is something I've been working on for a very long time. I have run like book fairs in the past, but they've always kind of left like a bad taste in my mouth, because I feel like they're quite exclusionary, to be honest. If you're running a book fair, you have to kind of justify the fact that your students have to kind of like wrestle with the fact that they just simply may not have any money to buy a book. Even if they're half price, the parents may just not have that ability, and that's the way things work. So when I do run a book fair, the library ends up buying a ton of books, because I end up giving them away in prizes and things like that. I don't know. I just can't stand the idea that this making kids look at books they can't afford. So working with publishers, authors, and many other people, I've been able to secure free books for every year 8. Year 7s all got a free book, one free book as well at the beginning of the year, through a program called Book Buzz, which I recommend. You do have to pay for that as a library. It's through Book Trust, which is a great charity. If you haven't heard of the Book Buzz program, simply Google Book Trust, all one word, and then Google, or yeah, well, you know how to Google. Right next to that word, write the word. Why am I? This is how to Google with Mr. Maxwell. Welcome to Book Buzz, BOOKBUZZ, and you can register for 2023. I really recommend it. Sorry, I'm having coffee here. Well, Book Buzz is an amazing program. So you can choose how many books you want. You get this huge array range of books. It's really cool. You get bookmarks and stuff like that. It does cost money, of course, but you got to support the charity. It's well worth it. I would really recommend doing that. And how did I get free books for every year 8 student? So this again took a long time. There's no magic button that I just press and have been able to do this. I've spent like 10 years basically cultivating and building up a reading for pleasure community in the school. And on top of this, I've built relationships with publishers and authors, which has resulted in this kind of book fair thing taking off. Social media has played a huge role, okay? Being on Twitter, as much as I despise it, to be honest, has been really amazing for the school. I've said this before many times, but the second those benefits go away, I just delete my account. It's very selfish probably, and I don't really care, but I don't like Twitter. I don't like social media at all, but I'm on there, and I use it to my advantage, because I want to. I'm not there to make friends or look for anything. I just it's been a good tool that benefits the students of the school and benefits the school itself, and benefits me, to be perfectly blunt about it. And so the second that stops, I'm gone. But social media has played a huge, huge role. And I didn't expect any of this. I didn't expect to be, sent books, to review books, etc. But I'm going to go through some steps that I've done that have helped me do this free book fair. Again, I don't know if this will work for you, but it's just the way it has worked for me. My first step would be to write book reviews. And you might not enjoy writing book reviews, but starting your own blog, writing your thoughts, however quick, however small, about the books you've been reading can make a huge difference. And when I say your books, I mean books that you've bought, okay? Or books you already have in your library. I would suggest doing this even if no one is around to send you free books. Create a social media account, have a theme. I think the problem with social media, that's the name of my other podcast. One problem is people who join it, maybe they don't know what they're supposed to do on there, so they just rant about garbage and they become idiots. I think you have to have a theme. I would suggest, and so of course I have a theme. I don't talk about my personal life a little bit, talking about being autistic and things like that, but I don't talk about my family at all. I don't think people should, to be honest. What am I trying to say? I have a theme. My theme, of course, is reading for pleasure. Everything should be related to reading for pleasure. Library initiatives. I do a lot about Dungeons and Dragons, which is to me is completely connected with reading for pleasure or well-being. I started in 2012 or 13 reviewing books. I just thought, oh, this would be fun to do. I had already like a Goodreads account. Again, this being very negative, this podcast, but I hate Goodreads. Absolutely hate it. But I use it to keep track of my books. I wrote a book. This is really braggy. I wrote a book called Let's Roll, which is a book on tabletop role-playing games, and I got a 2-star review on Goodreads, but no review. It was another librarian too. It's like, what? Some guy in the States. So if you're listening to this, why'd you do that, man? It's fine, but let me know. I want to know why you think it sucks. I just don't say 2 stars and then just drop off the face of the earth. But anyway, I didn't respond to it. I feel like just, I don't know. I had like a witty comment, I think, to him, but I didn't write it anyway. I created a social media account. I created an Instagram and I created a Twitter account for the library. And I started to write book reviews, tagging the author. The authors love book reviews. Positive book reviews. You should never, ever tag an author in a negative book review. If you do that, there's something wrong with you, I think. You should never do that. And you should never write negative book reviews on Goodreads. I don't understand. You're not a professional reviewer. You're not some expert. You're not writing for the New York Times. I'm not writing for the New York Times. This isn't your livelihood. I don't understand why people do that at all. Don't write negative reviews on Goodreads. Don't write negative reviews on Twitter. It's really idiotic. And don't tag authors in negative emails and things like that. It's really stupid. Tag the author and just be positive about it. They love to drag us in that and tag the publisher. If you know of their agent, sometimes on Twitter, an author will often put their agent's Twitter account on there. I am represented by blah, blah, blah. Tag them as well. They want to see that people are enjoying their books. And honestly, that's what I did. I've told this story many times before, but one of the first authors who ever interacted with me on Twitter was Holly Boren. And if you haven't read Holly Boren, she's an amazing YA author now going into the adult book world, or has already, I should say. Amazing author, absolutely one of the best young adult authors that's ever lived. And I would say we had a group of teens in the library who were obsessed with it was What's a Girl Gotta Do? I think when that came out, I'm pretty sure that was the right one. Or no, it might have been another one. But anyway, Holly's got so many amazing books. The Places I've Cried in Public is like one of our most popular books. It was Am I Normal Yet? That was there. That was the one that was really big. I think it was in like 2015 when that came out. And I think they were up, and I was just like, oh, and I didn't really know anything about the book. And they were like, oh, sir, could you please get Holly? Can you get this author in? And I read the books, and I thought, oh, these are really good and really insightful to the teen kind of mentality. So I tagged them on Twitter to say these, just they enjoyed it. And Holly responded. I was surprised because I didn't really know her or how Twitter worked or anything like that. So and I ended up Holly's come a few times to the library, and it's been an amazing visit every time. But it all started really on Twitter, just being like, yeah, these kids love your work. And when a student says something positive about an author's book, I will always tag them on Twitter. And honestly, that has resulted in publishers sometimes going, oh, do you want to review the next book by this author? And they just mail me the book. Okay, I'm not saying it's going to happen to you, but if you want to like start writing a book, I started like a book blog that I do. You don't need to be fancy. I don't do YouTube. I did YouTube over the pandemic, and I haven't had time to do that. If you're going to start a book blog, you obviously need to think of a name. It can be anything. It's hard to find a name. I chose the Portable Magic Dispenser, which is kind of like a thing I use for everything, which is like a take on a Stephen King quote, which he said something like books are uniquely portable magic. And I thought, oh, that's cool. And I thought of the library as like a dispenser of these portable magic devices. And I was trying to think of like something clever. And I'm a huge like Vonnegut fan, Philip K. Dick fan. So I thought, it sounds like something from like Total Recall or whatnot. That's the movie, but anyway, something like that. I thought it sounded something like Ubik from Philip K. Dick, a portable magic dispenser. Anyway, nothing you guys like more than references from 70 years ago. What I'm trying to say is start a book blog. You don't need to write pages and pages. I see these amazing blogs where they are writing like really in-depth critiques of the books, and I think those people deserve a round of applause, and I wish I had the time to do it. I do. I have to say that I do all this on my own time, and that's just something you have to be aware of as well. But tag the blog in the tag the authors with the blog, and you can then take part in blog tours. If they see that you've got a blog, you will be asked sometimes to take part in blog tours if you get a relationship out there on social media. Look at booksellers' websites, see which books are coming soon. You can get in touch with them. You could outright ask if you want to. You can introduce yourself via email, or you could just like start promoting your. I just started to write books that I had on my shelf, books that were coming in, new books that were coming in the library. And I just wrote a review. This is any book that I'd read. So if you are a librarian hoping to get free books, you have to read every single day. You have to read voraciously. And it's not easy because we have no time to read every day. And I struggle. But I do my best. I do read every day. Even if it's a comic book, I read tons of comics. It gives me a feeling of like a celebration when I finish it, because I can finish them a little earlier. I'm gonna drink more coffee now. There we go. Read every day. Write reviews maybe weekly if you can. I don't review weekly anymore, but I used to. And I think so. What happened to me was I was laid up for basically 4 months. Okay, I'm not going to go into that story, but I was off my feet for like 4 months back in 2015. And I essentially just read books and wrote and created a blog that way. And that's what I did. I'm not saying you need to have a major injury to start this, but you need to set aside the time. I was lucky that I had this time. So you need to follow, also, you need to follow authors and publishers on social media. I've said this already, but follow them, okay? Learn about what they're promoting, learn about what they're writing about, interact with them. It's just an amazing way to meet new people. And then you never know what's going to happen. I mean, I've been so lucky to be asked to be part of like book judging and things like that, all because of social media. I was a Costa Book Award judge because of social media. I don't know. It just happened, okay? Because I wrote a lot about books. I promote books tirelessly on there. I would say that's the thing to do on Instagram as well, on Twitter, is to just promote tirelessly. Go to conferences if you can. I know this isn't something every single person can do, but attending conferences through the School Library Association, SILIP, YLG, LILAC, others can put you in touch with publishers, and they also send you home with amazing books for free. This is also on top of meeting great people and learning tons of new things about librarianship, of course. I would say even better if you can apply to speak at a conference. I actually love doing this. I'm terrible one-on-one. As an autistic person in the world, I struggle one-on-one greatly. I don't like look people in the eye. I don't do meetings. I don't do any of that stuff. But If you put me in a room with a couple hundred people, I can stand there and try to make them try, emphasis on try, to make them laugh and try to get them engaged in the thing and what I'm talking about. I can do that. The second that's over, one person comes up to me at the end and go, "Oh, that was blah, blah, blah. that was rubbish. That was whatever I want to speak to me. I'm not doing so well." But what happens is that if you speak at one, it will result in you speaking on at more, and also increasing your presence on social media. Giving students a voice. I've talked about this, but I love hearing what students say about books, even if it's like just one sentence. So we do book reviews in the school. They can write their own online, or they can write them on paper. I always ask them, "Hey, this is a great review. Really nice. I'm glad you liked the book. Do you mind if I tell the author on Twitter?" They always say, "Oh, please, yeah, they love that." And all they the students love that they're gonna their review's gonna be made, given, the author's gonna be brought to the attention of their review. And authors, I guarantee you, 110%, authors love hearing that students love their books. That's who they're writing them for, right? And they don't often get the chance to go out to schools or whatever, or events. Not every author gets to go to those events. The other thing is, like, simply take part in giveaways. There's tons, like hashtag giveaways or hashtag book giveaways or giveaway alert or whatever on social media can potentially land you like huge sets of books. I was really fortunate early on in my library career to get some really cool books through giveaways. And I also visit charity shops. And this is the blunt truth. I spend a lot of my own money on books because I love reading. And if I see a book, and I know you guys are doing it as well, if you're in a charity shop, you know what I'm talking about. You can sometimes find like enti I found like an entire Death Note set for almost like nothing. They were just like giving it away, which I. It was like, "Oh, yeah." So I'm trying to act cool, like, "Oh, yeah." I'm just hoping nobody caught on that I was essentially getting this for such a ridiculously low price. So anyway, visit charity shops as much as you can. So again, that's really quick, but I would say writing book reviews, establishing yourself that way, following authors on social media, and just constantly tagging authors in positivity will result in them interacting with you more, and maybe telling their agent or publisher, I should say, send them a new book, send them a book to write a review of. This is really great. And I mean, the point is, just in my opinion, the point is to be a nice person. Just be a nice person on social media can has been beneficial to me. You don't need to be nice for an end result. Just be a nice person in general. And I'm not saying that no one, there's a lot of not nice people, of course, but I think, I don't know, I think being trying to be positive on there has been beneficial to me. And it's hard to kind of whatever quantify, but I think just being dogged about being positive and being relentless in promoting your work. Anything you should be, librarians don't are not very good at being self promoters. I'm not very good at it. You might think differently about what you see on Twitter, because I do promote like my own book and things like that, but I'm not very good at it. I'm very negative about myself all the time. So you have to kind of put all that aside, just be like, "Hey, this is cool. I love this," or, "This is what I've done." Any positive program in the library that you've done that you can tag an author in. Just reach out. You got to be open. I hope that was helpful. I really don't know if that was, but that's it. That's the end of this episode. I really thank you very much, and I'll try to be back next week. Take care, and thanks for listening. Bye bye.